But yes, my boyfriend passed away, and he had been battling for years and years and years depression, and battling depression and battling addiction, and I couldn't save him, and I had to learn. I had to learn something really early that, you know, no one should have to. But, you know, the lessons that I learned and, you know, the actions that I took in that moment, in that pit, because I found myself in like a really deep, dark hole. Mm. It was, you know, awful. It was a bottom, but the lessons that I learned, the actions that I took, those things are the things that led me to a place of growth and of strength, and sometimes even a place of peace. But it's the work that you do. You know, it's the work that you do to be the best version of you and not someone else, and letting go of the things that you can't control.
Welcome to another episode of the Trainer's Spotlight. So excited to be doing this on the podcast. I know that the whole podcast is based on, you know, neuroscience, medicine, mental performance, and as well as interviewing the best doctors in the world. We also interview some of the best trainers in the world, especially here in New York City at Everlast headquarters. So I'm turning all of my episodes with elite fitness trainers here in New York City into a trainer spotlight, which brings me to my next part. This is episode 111, and we're going into the trainer spotlight with Selena Samuela from Peloton. Selena is a unique combination of an Italian upbringing and a Hawaiian state of mind. Raised in Italy in a family of professional soccer players, sports were a way of life. When she moved to Hawaii for college, she developed a passion for surfing and for the spiritual side of fitness. Relocating to New York City, she channeled this into a career training as an amateur boxer and teaching boxing. Selena brings an empowering energy to Peloton, teaching members how to tap into themselves to unleash their power and accomplish goals they never thought they could achieve. Let's go. 1500 threads in my linen sheets. Look like you're missing waking up next to me. Staying relevant's the only shit I'm focused on. Like yesterday, you forever in the past to me. Selena, welcome to the Neuro Experience Podcast. Welcome to Everlast headquarters.
Yes, it's so exciting to be here.
I am so excited for you to be here. mainly because, A, it is my dream to get every single Peloton instructor on this podcast, okay?
Well, you're on your way.
I'm on my way. Almost. I've got like, you know, 30% of you. B, absolutely inspired by everything you do. I know that you're a marathon runner. I know you personally. I know a lot of the things that you've gone through. I'm excited for this to get out to the community. Now, for everybody listening, this is a new thing that I'm doing. It's called Trainer Spotlight. So we kind of wanted to differentiate because it's a neuroscience-based podcast. We've got a lot of medical people listening to this, a lot of people in the medical field, and then just my love of sport, my love of fitness, and my love of New York City. I wanted to get the best trainers on here just to give us all some inspiration, give us a bit about their background and get to know them more intensely. So it's going to be handed over to you now, Selena. Give us a quick background into you and tell us a bit about your marathon training. I know that you're training for a marathon now.
Yeah. So I'm training for a marathon now. I'm training for Boston 2020. So this one that's coming up here in April, on April 20th. Wow. And it's my second marathon. My first marathon, I qualified for Boston.
Oh, so you actually have to qualify.
Yeah, there's different ways to get into the marathon. Qualifying is one of them. But yeah, you have to qualify to get into the race.
Okay, so great. So right now we're training every day. We're training for the Boston Marathon. You've done a marathon before.
Yep.
How do you go about training? Because marathon running training is so difficult. Mm-hmm. What are you doing?
Yeah, there's a training program that you have to follow, and anyone who runs a marathon follows a training program. Everyone's training program looks different. You know, I also teach running. So my training program probably looks different from the average person who might, you know, have a job in an office or something. So my program is pretty straightforward. I have a speed workout day that falls on Tuesdays. That's today. So actually after this, I'm going to have my speed workout. And
what, do you do that on a track? Do you do that on the treadmill?
Yeah. So sometimes I do it on the track and sometimes I do it on a treadmill. And so you've probably heard, if you're in the running community, you've heard of Track Tuesdays, and it's people often do their speed work on Tuesdays. I'm a little different. I'm a little bit of a loner. I like to do my runs on my own. I know a lot of people like to do it, you know, with a group or, you know, in a community. And I think there's great benefits to that. I'm a weirdo. I sometimes will go with my running coach. But I actually like to do, especially in the winter, because I'm such a baby about the cold, I like to do my speed work on a treadmill, and the Peloton tread is just such an amazing, beautiful machine. So I do
it really is.
Yeah. So I do a lot of my training there, and you know, the benefits for that are that you get to kind of, you know exactly what pace you're hitting because you're setting your pace. So you're going to actually hit those goal paces that you have for yourself, your interval paces, right on the money. Whereas if you're doing it on a track, like some might be a couple seconds off or a couple seconds, whatever. And, you know, not that that matters a whole lot, but it's nice, especially if you're a little bit of a perfectionist, to like really hit it right on the money.
So when I used to do triathlons, my coach used to say, if you're going to, you know, if it's raining and we're going to do some work on the treadmill inside, he always used to say, put the incline to level one, just to kind of mimic what you're doing outside on the road. Is that something that you do?
Yeah, totally. Like a 1.5 or 2% incline. Yeah, because that'll just kind of make up for any variables that you would encounter outside, wind resistance, rain, whatever.
So you mentioned Peloton.
Yeah.
So you're in, how long have you been there for?
Just about 2 years.
Wow.
Going on 2 years in April.
Okay, so you just bike and run, are you both?
I just teach the tread program. So tread, running, strength, stretching.
So you find time to run a marathon, train for a marathon, and also run on a treadmill and teach other people how to run.
Yep.
Wow. I always say that you guys are like entertainers. You're like fitness, you're like a runner, but also an entertainer. That would actually kill me. How are you recovering?
Cool. I love this topic because I think, you know, there are tons of different ways to recover. We could go on about like, you know, traditional methods of recovery. The one that's like most obvious is I have a PT, I have a physical therapist that I go to every week, at least once a week, sometimes twice a week, especially if I have something that's kind of bothering me. You know, I love him. His name's Luke Greenberg, Motive.
Actually, you said you were going to intro me to him.
I am going to intro you. He is... a magician.
Luke, if you're listening.
Yeah, Luke, if you're listening.
Great.
He's he's just like a lifesaver. He's
amazing.
Wait,
so you go to him as a precautionary. Yep. So you don't snap an Achilles and then go to him.
No.
You go to him to preventative. It's like preventative medicine. It's like instead of treating the disease, how can we prevent the disease? I always love that topic, but it comes hand in hand in the fitness space. How can we prevent
exactly,
you know, especially when you're doing, how many miles are you doing a week, do you think?
Well, as I ramp up, you know, my long runs,
yeah.
Training programs are designed to like ramp up your, you know, your runs, your, the distance that you're running every week. Then that mileage changes, but you know, it can be anywhere from like 30 to maybe on an extreme week, like all the way up to like 60, 70, 80, you know,
what?
That's extreme.
Oh,
that's extreme.
God. That
would be like, that's not, I don't think I've hit 60, over 60 miles, not 80. I think I've heard of Bex hitting 80 miles in a week, but like, you know, if I have my 22 miler that week, that's 22 miles just on that. And then I'm teaching, you know, I have my speed work, and sometimes speed work, I'll ramp up to like 10 miles on a speed work day. And then I have tempo, and sometimes I'll ramp up like, you know, 8, 9, 10 miles there. So there you go. That's already 42 miles. And then I'm teaching classes. I teach 5 days a week. So boom, 60 happens real fast.
Can I just interject and say that 60 miles, guys, is 96 kilometers for anybody listening in Australia or the UK. 96 kilometers.
We're talking about an extreme week for me though. Like, but you know, marathon runners, people that do a lot of running.
It's like a normal thing. So like,
I mean, it's not normal every week, but that's like on my heavy week that might happen.
You know, this is why I'm fascinated in recovery. I'm fascinated in how well you're sleeping, how well you're recovering. I mean, I think I asked you this, you know, when we were talking last, if you do any ice baths or cryotherapy and something that right. you haven't done yet.
Right.
Oh my God.
I haven't done cryo yet. No, I haven't done. We have to do it together.
Yeah, we're definitely going to go.
Because I'm so scared of it. I was telling him a baby about cold. I hate running in the cold. People love running in the cold. I hate running in the cold.
Okay, so
40s I'm fine with. Below that, I start freaking out.
So when I listen to you and when we talk, and with any marathon runner, I always believe that you've got to have some level of mental endurance to be able to go that far. And well, I don't know, like in triathlons, we weren't allowed to have anything in our ears. Is that changed? Are you allowed to run with an iPod in?
For marathons?
Yeah.
Yeah, people run with headphones. I don't.
You don't. So that's, I remember you told me that. And it made me think about, wow, like, is that mental, you know, that mental toughness inbuilt in you? And then... Yeah, what, like where were you born? Where were you raised? And let's try and get to the bottom of how she got so mentally tough.
So I was actually not even born in this country. I was born in Italy and I grew up there until I was about 10, 11 years old. And so then I moved to the States, to upstate New York. So I did junior high school and high school in upstate New York. And as a teenager, I like loved extreme sports. I loved snowboarding, skiing, but I also found surfing during the summers.
Oh, beautiful.
And like New Jersey Shore. And, I was so addicted. So when I graduated high school, I went out to Hawaii and I ended up going to college out there. And I was like, I mean, I went out there to surf, let's be honest. And then
does everyone surf in Hawaii?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like a thing.
It's like, it's cultural. It's like the way that like, I don't know, like you go out for a picnic, like a family goes out surfing together.
Wow.
Yeah.
What are the waves like? What's the swell like out there?
Okay. So Hawaii is the most beautiful place in the world.
Who hasn't been to Australia says that.
I have been to Australia and you know what? Byron Bay is like one of my Byron's favorite places gorgeous. Like on earth, I have to say.
Like the swell in Australia reaches, you know, pretty high levels. So what are we looking, I mean, unless you're going to, I don't know, Chipo or somewhere in
Pipeline.
Where are you? What's the swell like everywhere else?
So Hawaii is great because it has a wave for everybody. Like there's, you know, you could go to Waikiki and it's the best beginner wave ever. It goes forever. You could push the keiki, as they call it, or kids into the waves. And, you can, you know, learn there, or then there's beach break, there's reef breaks, there's just about everything. Then you have the North Shore and the swell in the winters are, you know, those epic swells that you see on WSL Instagram or whatever, or any time that you see like pictures of surfing, it's typically like, you know, these big massive waves at Pipeline or Sunset. And that's the North Shore.
Beautiful.
Massive groundswell. So there's something for everybody on the island, and different parts of the island will kind of go off at different times of the year. So south swells happen more in the summer and north swells happen more in the winter. And then the west and the east side get, you know, different kind of swells depending.
I don't know if this is a thing, but, you know, growing up in Australia and surfing myself, I always saw a relationship between runners and surfers. Mm. And we were always in the water, you know, as triathletes, we had to learn how to, you know, swim in the ocean. It was always ocean swimming. And there's always, I always looked at anybody who was just a long distance runner. They're always, you know, in Australia, they're always a surfer too. Do you feel like the two correlate?
I think that, I mean, there's an aspect, there's a health and wellness aspect, right? Like surfers, they're so obsessed with surfing and it's like, you know, you want to be healthy to be in the water and active and strong. In Hawaii, a lot of people who were really serious about their surfing were serious about their health, and running is supplemental potentially. I didn't know a lot of people that were like actual, like, you know, triathletes or marathon runners at the time, but personally. But for me, you know, I definitely think that they go hand in hand, and there's, you know, there's something about surfing that's obviously very meditative, and there's something about running that's very meditative for
me. That's what it is. It's meditative. So you were okay, so born and raised in Italy, then we went to New York, upstate New York, then we went to Hawaii. What happened then?
And then I moved to New York City. I really wanted to pursue like a career as a performer. I wanted to be a performer. I was fascinated by the arts. And I really wanted to find myself as an artist. I loved writing and I loved theater and film. So I wanted to do it all. I wanted to be a writer, actor, director.
All of it. You've kind of fulfilled that. You guys are pretty much actors and for not sure. actors, but you're a performer, as I said, on that treadmill.
Totally. Yeah. And we're, you know, we're DJs too, because we create our own playlists and producers because we're coming up with our classes. And
100%.
Yes, it's true. It's not far off.
I love that. So how'd you actually get into Peloton?
So like, you know, my pursuit in the arts and in entertainment led to my job in fitness, especially when I was flopping and not getting jobs.
Yeah. Haven't we all been there?
And so that led me to working in fitness. I was trying to get my foot in the door in Hollywood. I thought maybe getting into stunts would be really great using my body. I had this like revelation that I've always been so happy when I use my body and movement to work. So I like really just went head first into, I went to like stunt driving school and I really wanted to perfect my fight technique. And I had a little bit of a background in boxing. So I was in Gleason's gym every day and that kind of led me onto this.
Oh, Gleason's gym.
It led me onto this path. I ended up becoming an amateur boxer.
Your parents at the time were probably thinking,
What is she doing?
Yeah, let her get past this phase and then she'll come home.
They've literally always thought that. I mean, I moved to Hawaii because I was obsessed with surfing and there was like, what is she doing?
Yeah.
You know, I moved to New York to be a performer. What is she doing?
Yeah.
Like, now she's an amateur boxer. What the hell,
she's getting
Zelena?
Punched in the face. Like,
It was, you know, it's one of those things that's like, I know it's so scary, but like trusting your gut and like trusting that like if you give your 100% into this pursuit, that it's going to be okay. And it might not be the goal that you originally set your intention on, you know, but if you are giving your 100% effort towards something, either you'll get that thing or you'll find a path that's better for you. Because you're going to learn so much on the way during that journey. It's gonna take you to something special.
100%. I always say that, you know, there's this controversy around passion. You know, whenever somebody asks me, like, do you feel like, you know, you have to be passionate about what you do? I'm like, not just passionate, because you can't, to be great, to be the best at something, you can't just be passionate. You've got to be obsessed. I think you have to have some level of obsession. Now, to be passionate,
100%
look,
agree.
Like, I'm passionate about cooking. I'm Greek Cypriot. My parents were born and raised there. I was raised in Australia, but I was brought up very Greek. So we learned, you know, to love cooking. I love it. Doesn't mean I want to be a chef, you know, but I'm so obsessed with what I do, so obsessed with neuroscience, neurology, athleticism, you know, peak performance, human optimization. I think that's what separates everyone from, you know, who they are to, you know, the people who want to be there. So I see that level in you too. I see that you've got this drive, like, you know, anyone who can run a marathon and also teach and entertain, like, you've kind of combined all of your expertise, like your fitness, your, you know, your love for theater and entertainment. You've kind of like combined them all.
Yeah, it really was like a dream come true. And it made so much sense. I didn't know it, you know, when I was like, all right, I guess I'm going to shoot for the stars here.
Yeah.
And just give it my 100%. I didn't know it at the time, but it all ended up leading to the spot, like leading to exactly where I needed to be, you know, exactly where I belonged. So like as an amateur boxer, I got recruited to work at Shadowbox and then I was recruited to work for Peloton. And it all really made sense once I got there. I was like, oh.
And all the pieces to the puzzle connect.
Yeah.
Because we were talking about like, you know, how did you and I actually like start, you know, how did we meet? And that's actually how I, like, that was my very first workshop ever in New York City, was at Shadowbox back in 2016, I think, or maybe 2017. So that's wonderful. So, Selena, the thing that I love about when you and I talk is the fact that you shared some incredible experiences with me, things that you've gone through in the past, and they've really shaped who you are today. Mainly a particular challenge that you've gone through with a relationship, and I know that a lot of our listeners that are on here who love you, who respect you, who, you know, who are out there on their personal development journey could actually really benefit from this story. So why don't you talk to us about that?
Yeah. So, and I have talked about this a little bit, even on my social media. I've talked about dealing with grief and overcoming challenges. And, you know, throughout my life, I've had my share of challenges. And I think the most recent and probably the most relevant and the one that you're referring to right now, I think, is the challenge about getting through grief, the loss of my partner. I was with someone, my boyfriend, we were together for about 4 years in my 20s. The person that really inspired me to go for it and when I first moved to New York from Hawaii, he was also a performer and a writer, and we just had, you know, these big plans to do everything together. But that's another story. But yes, my boyfriend passed away, and he had been battling for years and years and years depression, battling depression and battling addiction, and I couldn't save him, and I had to learn. I had to learn something really early that, you know, no one should have to. But, you know, the lessons that I learned and, you know, the actions that I took in that moment, in that pit, because I found myself in like a really deep, dark hole. It was, you know, awful. It was a bottom, but the lessons that I learned, the actions that I took, those things are the things that led me to a place of growth and of strength, and sometimes even a place of peace. But it's the work that you do. You know, it's the work that you do to be the best version of you and not someone else, and letting go of the things that you can't control.
I think that's like, you know, such an amazing story, because what you learn from grief, you know, when we look at neurology, when the brain goes through grief, okay, it doesn't know the difference between you losing a loved one or you literally getting smacked by a car. It just registers as trauma.
Yeah.
So you go through the exact same thing as a really traumatic experience, and things that you learn from that, if you can really overcome that, which you obviously have, and there's so many lessons out there that make you a better, not a better person, but you know how to handle anything in life. I always say that whenever somebody goes through any type of traumatic experience, even, you know, even if it's a breakup of some sort or anything like that, any type of traumatic experience, and you're able to get out of that dark cave and see the light and regain your strength and who you are,
yes,
it sets you up. It's like a shield for everything else that comes into your life. And people probably look at you on screen or at Peloton and think that, you know, you're this beautiful, blonde, blue-eyed girl, surfer, and doesn't have a worry in the world.
Yep.
No one really knows what's going on behind closed doors.
Yeah. But yeah, I think you're right. It equips you to handle challenges in a way that you wouldn't normally, had you not had those experiences. You know, another thing I think that's important to talk about is that it's okay to grieve, and it's okay to be sad, and it's actually really important to acknowledge it. Acknowledge the pain, see it for what it is, but then keep moving. You know, like, don't stop. Movement is life.
So you mean when we experience something bad, don't just stop in the tracks and dwell, and move past it? Do you mean like literally like understanding, okay, great, this is what's happening now?
Don't die with them, you know? Don't die with them. And I think part of that is giving yourself space to grieve and to acknowledge it and to be sad, and but also giving yourself, you know, acknowledge the small victories, like even if it is so small, like getting in the shower that day, because when you're really down there at the bottom of that pit, like that's hard to do. But getting in the shower that day, like that's a victory. Cooking yourself a meal, or even going out to get something, eating something, you know, acknowledge those little victories, and every day, little by little, adding more on, because you're able to do a little bit more, and you're able to do a little bit more because you still have that little glimpse of light. You still have, you know, you still have that hope. Hang on to that hope, and that's what's going to give you that movement.
So when you were going through all of this and you were in that hole, did you ever see, what were some of the thoughts that you had? Like, did you think, I'm never going to get out of this, or I'm not going to get over this?
Yeah, definitely. So those are thoughts that pop up, and those are also thoughts that pop up like today, like even in a run, right? Mm-hmm. Like in your long run, like, oh, I can't do this, or mm-hmm. those moments of doubt, like they exist, but you know, you almost kind of need those moments of doubts to overcome those moments of doubt. Mm. So it's like, don't let those moments stop you and derail you. Embrace them, acknowledge them for what they are, but then tell them, not today. Mm. Like, no.
Exactly. It's about the self-talk, right?
Yeah, it's about the self-talk. It's about really believing in your strength and your power and your light.
I really love that. I think that if I asked you what was the number one lesson you learned from your grief and actually overcoming it and regaining your sense of self, what would it be?
You know, I think it's going easy on yourself. And I think it's acknowledging those things, acknowledging the pain, allowing it to exist, not shoving it away or telling yourself that you're bad or you're wrong for feeling those feelings, or that, like, you know, setting these expectations on yourself to just be happy every single day, but also giving yourself that pat on the back for doing the little things, the little victories, the small victories. And I think it's like that being okay with those moments that you were describing, those moments of fear and doubt, and knowing that revelation is on the other side of fear and doubt, right? Facing those fears and then moving past those fears. That's when you level up. Mm. That's the moment that you grow. That's where growth comes in.
I love that. Wow. So, okay, we went through that. I know after that you kind of took a turn, went back to try and find yourself. You went back to Hawaii. Mm. Is that...
I went to Bali, actually.
Okay, Bali.
My best friend from Hawaii was living in Bali at the time.
You went back to Bali, sorry. When was this?
This was, 2014?
Okay.
Yeah, I think I went in 2015. Lex passed away in 2014.
Okay, so 2015, spent some time there. So let's just say you came back to New York 2016?
Something like that.
Yeah.
I can't remember exactly the years. It's a little bit of a blur, but 2015, 2016, yeah.
Okay, so over the last 4 years,
yes,
what's been the biggest exciting thing that you've done? I know that in that time you came to Peloton, obviously, you were at Shadowbox. So where are we at now?
We're at Peloton. I ran my first marathon. I won that marathon, actually.
See, there is light at the end of the tunnel. I love that.
Which is hilarious because it wasn't particularly fast. But the thing that was impressive about it, for me at least, and it was impressive to me, not, you know, necessarily the world, but for me, is that I didn't expect to run it fast enough to qualify for Boston. And I did. I ran it fast enough to qualify for Boston. And I also happened to win the race. It wasn't a very big race. There were only 400 people there. It was in Nova Scotia. It was beautiful. But, you know, small race. It was cool to cross the finish line as the first woman.
So I would love to understand. I know you're going to hate me for that. Everyone's actually going to hate this question because you're not strict around this. But what diet are you following?
Okay, so... I don't follow a specific diet. So like, I'm not keto, I'm not gluten-free or anything like that. I try to...
Are you sugar-free?
No, I'm not sugar-free. I'm not totally sugar-free, but I try to, I try to eat fruits and that sort of thing because I do have a sweet tooth.
Okay.
And so when I get closer to like marathon and when I'm training for a marathon, I try not to go crazy on sweets because I love, love, love gummy bears and Skittles and candy. So like right now,
oh, really?
Oh my God. Yeah. I love that stuff. And I try to go organic yeah, I have a sweet tooth and cake and chocolate and all that. So when I get closer to the date of my race or, you know, when I was fighting, same, I had to, God, that was a whole nother story because I had to like drop weight to make weight classes and stuff like that. So that's, you know, again, a totally different topic. But in those moments, yeah, like I try to cut sugars out and, you know, I try to stay relatively healthy. I have a diet that it's not totally plant-based, but I get a lot of my carbs and even from vegetables, and I try to keep red meat to a minimum. It's pretty loose, to be honest with you.
It is not really structured, but it's there. And it's
the thing that I do that is structured is I try my best to eat sustainably and local.
Okay.
So if I go out, I like to go to farmers markets to shop for my foods. Mm. And, you know, that's because I have a passion for sustainability and for the earth and, and the environment. So that is something that kind of has to do with nutrition.
So have you got any performance tips for us? Any recovery tips, anything out there, any running tips, anything out there for someone who is excited to run? Maybe they want to do their first 5 kilometer half marathon.
Create a training plan or create a training plan with a coach and stick to that training plan. If you are doing a marathon, prioritize your long run. If all else fails, prioritize the long run.
Really?
Yeah.
Is it because my coach used to say that the best training is races, because nothing can prepare you better for a race than a race itself.
Totally.
It's the same with marathons.
I mean, yeah, like this marathon that I'm doing now, I'm going into it with a lot more knowledge than my first one. So I also know what worked for me and what didn't. I also know that winter training is horrible and I don't 100%. Want to do it again.
100%. Okay, so we're wrapping things up. I want to ask you a question that I ask everybody who comes on the podcast, and that is, what's the one piece of advice that you could give somebody so they could dramatically improve their life?
Be relentless in your pursuit of you. Take risks and, you know, don't let fear of failure keep you from pushing boundaries or from trying something new or for setting a new goal, whether it's a new goal pace or I don't know, anything really. And, you know, you might not hit it. Maybe you don't hit that goal, but what's worse, the pain of discipline or the pain of regret? I like to think of that.
Damn, I love that. That just reminded me of the Muhammad Ali quote when he says, I'd rather suffer now than, you know, and live my life as a champion. How, you know, I forget the direct quote, but it was the same thing. It's like, go through the discipline now because the rewards, you know, far outweigh that.
You're not going to regret the work that you put in. Even if you don't win the marathon, you're not going to regret that journey and what you learn along that journey, but you are going to regret never doing it. That's going to stay with you way longer than like that just initial kind of like, oh man, I'm bummed because, you know, I got 1 minute off my time or whatever. I think also like, remember, like, don't be scared to like really take those risks, because a calculated risk is fearless. It's not reckless. Be fearless. Go for that shit.
I love that so much. Selena, where can we find you on social media?
You can check me out on Instagram. My handle is at Selena Samuela. That's SelenaSamuela.
And we can also find you on the Peloton app and on that Peloton tread. Thank you for joining us.